Welcome to Film Fight Club, the show where we don't talk about film, we fight about film. I'm Glenn Falkenstein from Falcon Screen, and we are joined by Chris Evans, a local Sydney filmmaker.
Hello, hello.
And Virat Nehru, a freelance writer and critic.
Hello, everyone.
Now, this is our second show. We kicked off last week. We're very excited. We've got a big show. We're talking Colossal. We're talking Star Wars spin-offs. We're talking film festivals in Sydney. But for the first part, we have to talk about the rules of Film Fight Club. And the first rule, as always, is you do not talk about Film Club.
Second rule is you do not talk about Film Club.
Third rule is when the ref says stop, the fight is over.
Rule number four, only two to a fight.
Rule number five, one fight at a time.
Rule number six, the most important rule, no spoilers.
And rule number seven, if this is your first night at Film Club, you have to fight. Now, we do have a special guest coming on later. It's their first night and they're going to have to fight.
But we're not fighting them.
No, we're not fighting them. They'll be fine. We're going to start off with the big news in the film world this week, and that is actually sad news that the great director Jonathan Demme passed away at the age of 73. Now, he's a big ubiquitous filmmaker. He has made many films over decades. He made many comedies, which we'll discuss shortly in the 70s and 80s. He made Philadelphia later in his career, which many of you will know, the Manchurian Candidate remake, Ricky and the Flash most recently, the Justin Timberlake musical documentary on Netflix. But for me, the film that he made that is most significant, that is in my all-time top 10, which will be known to, I think, everyone, is The Silence of the Lambs. Now, this film, you can trace the modern interest with serial killers, with profiling, back to this film. This is a masterpiece. And it is a credit to Demme that they took the actual weakest of the three novels, it was the middle in the trilogy, and turned it into what is, in my view, up there with Casablanca and very few others, with a film that is nearly flawless. This is a film where the villain, Dr. Hannibal Lecter, due in part to Hopkins and Demme's direction, was voted the number one villain of all time. It is a film that has been copied and parried, the famous walk down to the cell, which many of you will know as being, you've seen in the many films, but it was done best by Demme. It is Scott Glenn, Jodie Foster, he made a phenomenal picture and he will be very missed, but he has made many good films in his career.
Probably my favorite or one of my favorites is Rachel Getting Married, certainly the best recent film he's made, in my opinion. This film exemplifies something that a lot of those who knew Demme well spoke about it in light of his passing, which is his huge amount of warmth, love for humanity, and empathy. This film radiates such a generosity of spirit. This film is just pitch perfect in its direction because it gives the material the exact right amount of space. It's a family drama, you know, in the indie spirit with a lot of people yelling at each other and past traumas being drawn back up. But a lesser director could easily have smothered the audience with this material. But Demme uses it to bring out absolutely beautiful performances from Anne Hathaway and Rosemary DeWitt in my opinion, career-high performances. He gives this material the exact right amount of room to breathe. And a big contributor to this is his distancing himself a little bit from the script to bring out a new element in the film, which is its big focus on music. There is improvised music running throughout this film, throughout the house where the drama is going on. And this reflects the emotional instability of the family and the protagonist played by Anne Hathaway. And it also gives the movie this freewheeling energy where you never know where it's going to go. And this music ends up being used as a really, in my opinion, innovative way to bring the film to a climax where a lot of the material in the script that was meant to wrap up the plot was replaced by a extended musical performance, which just brings all of the emotion running through the drama up to this point to the center and brings about catharsis and release just through pure human joy and performance. It's a beautiful film and it deserves your viewing.
It's a great point that you talked about Rachel Getting Married, Chris, because the movies I really liked with Jonathan Demme are the movies that people kind of have forgotten that he made. And those are his comedies back from the 80s. So I want to talk about Melvin and Howard, a movie that I love to this day, and it holds up really well. You know, and that's one of the things about Demme that I want to talk about. His really sincere depiction of the American dream and its paradoxical nature. You know, the idea that everyone wants to get rich. Everyone wants to have that perfect suburbia life, But yet, we don't have any patience. And it's something that we all can relate to. You know, everyone wants to do it now. We don't need to wait. And so you have the classic middle class loser character that's been exemplified in American comedy since then, called Melvin. And he is played by Paul DeMatt. And he meets the reclusive billionaire Howard Hughes, played by Jason Robards. It's a beautiful coming to eclectic characters. And then there are other characters there as well. There's Mary Steenburgen playing Melvin's wife, whom he divorces twice and then remarries. And she has the compulsion to dance in the entire film. So she gets up and dances in whatever opportunity she makes. And there's a beautiful sequence in which Rolling Stone's Satisfaction plays at a strip club. And, you know, Melvin's wife is dancing while it's doing that. And it's a hilarious sequence. And it's got a lot of humanity to it. And I think that's what sort of Demme's comedies really got it right. The heart of the 70s comedies. Comedies like Hal Ashby's Shampoo, which really talked about the American spirit and what it meant to have those kind of characters.
I'd also find remarkable about this director is his range. I mean, you spoke about Varathi's comedies earlier in the 80s. He made many dramatic films later. But one of the films we haven't mentioned is Philadelphia, perhaps one of them he's best known for. This is a film made in 1993 at the height of the AIDS epidemic, where it was a very taboo subject. It was a very difficult subject to broach. And he made a very confronting film about it. And it's still a very powerful film today, and still a very relevant film today. Tom Hanks, known as a bit of a playboy, but then he made this. Denzel Washington, a young, handsome star who was in all these action films, and suddenly, no, he went for this drama. And today, it is one of the films both of them are most well remembered for.
I also think Talking Heads fans will note that Demme was behind Stop Making Sense, which many people think is one of the greatest musical documentaries or concert films of all time. The man had incredible range. He could tackle hard thrillers, light comedies, and everything in between. One of his very underrated films, in my opinion, is Something Wild, which demonstrates this. It's a film that starts with really wild, absurd comic material, but then Demme takes the material so seriously that he's able to effortlessly pull off a tonal shift that brings out the darkness that's underlying a lot of the strange, funny things that set up in the first act.
Yeah, Something Wild is a great example of a road movie before it became a caricature through National Lampoon films. You know, now when you think of road movies, we think of that kind of We're the Millers kind of dynamic, you know, exaggerated characters finding themselves in even more exaggerated, absurd situations.
Nothing is serious.
I know, but that's what Demme got right. His humor comes not from the elaborateness of the gag, but from the humanity of the characters. Mm. These are noble people trying to just get by. And there's something real about that. There's nothing forced. And we kind of connect with that.
His films feel genuine, above all.
Definitely. And that's not something you can say about a lot of today's American comedies. They're not genuine. They're largely farcical.
And but he is someone, I mean, the most recent Ricky in the Flash, it got quite a decent reception, but it was a family drama. It was a family comedy. And like with Rachel Getting Married, it ended with this amazing crescendo. And he brought, but what I found particularly interesting about that and others, that he took great actors and brought amazing performances from them, whether it be Meryl Streep, whether it be John Voight, and Meryl Streep again in The Manchurian Candidate. Not the best remake in and of itself, but still a very interesting film and one that's still very prevalent and relevant today. And now we have a very special guest, Angela Blake, the director of the Smartphone Film Festival, SF3. Angela, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. So SF3, there really isn't anything quite like it in Australia. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so SF3 is the Smartphone Flick Fest. It is Australia's only dedicated international smartphone film festival. So we are open to filmmakers of all ages, of all levels. So we have absolute beginners all the way through to professional filmmakers. We've had from over 40 countries around the world. So in the past 2 years, we've had over 600 entries. And we last year predominantly focused very heavily on our Sydney and Australian media to try to get local filmmakers making films. And I think we went from about 10% Aussie content to 90% within a year. So that's something that's a great passion of ours, is getting Australians to make films on their smartphones, because the smartphone is the democratization of the film industry. Really, it's never going to replace a big camera. People still shoot on film, but digital came along, you know. And so it keeps revolutionizing the industry, and the smartphone and the tablet is just the latest incantation of that. So we really are showcasing the talents of people who don't have big budgets, who just have a phone, who can now shoot in full HD.
Absolutely. And I've been to the past few festivals, and it's just amazing to see it grow from strength to strength and see it get such a phenomenal audience, but also a grassroots audience. What do the festival patrons have to be excited about for this year?
Yeah, well, it is completely unknown, even to us. We have just launched for entries, which means we have one entry already, which came in before we launched, which is amazing. I haven't even watched the film yet, so I like to kind of wait till the end. Ali and I, my co-founder Ali Crew, we curate the festival. So we do select all the finalists. We watch each film separately and come together. And then we hand it over to a panel of judges. So we are excited because from our first year to our second year, as Glenn, you will have probably noticed, I think you'd agree with me, the quality of films was just crazy amazing, so much so that we had to add an extra category, which was the first filmmaker, the film breaker, which is named after our major sponsor, Jason Van Genderen, who's a great smartphone filmmaker from the Pocket Film Academy. And because we didn't want to put off people from making films, so we've got a first-time filmmaker award to encourage, the grassroots filmmakers, people who've never made a film. Just the leap in that first to second year was amazing. So now we have sevens. We have Samsung 7, the iPhone 7. People are really getting into the filmmaking on their phone. So I think it's going to be crazy amazing.
Absolutely. And that Film Breaker winner this year, it was just filmed in Surrey Hills. It was filmed at a terrace. It was about a major issue about PTSD. And Liam Fallon, his film was just excellent. It was one of a number
first of time ever film. Like, he's an actor, but I think he filmed it in 2 days or something. It was just amazing. It's an amazing film. It deserved to win. He also won Best Actor. I mean, he won other awards, it was just such a great film. First ever film. So, really just get your phone out of your pocket and shoot, right?
I think it's really important and a great thing that you have this Film Breaker Award, because I think a lot of the local film festivals we've had that have started out as something to encourage beginners and grassroots filmmaking have become completely overtaken by professional film production crews and
100%,
ad agencies or people who have a lot of industry experience. As you were saying in your introduction, I think the most interesting thing about the smartphone is the way that as the technology has gotten better, we're providing something which is of a good enough technical quality that it can hold its own against more professionally produced content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really giving the power to people who, really have never made a film before. And I think it's really important to give a space for absolute beginners to get their thing seen and to get it in front of an appreciative audience.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons we started the festival, was because Ali and I met during Short and Sweet Theatre Festival, which lets anyone get up on stage, anyone write a play, anyone direct. It's amazing. And we thought there's nothing like this for films. And then I'd just been living in America for a couple of years, and I was like, in America, people were starting to do things on their phones. It was a very new thing because technology just kind of started getting good. And then Ali and I were like, let's combine these two ideas, which is where SF3, we started that festival. Being aware that, the biggest festivals around here in Australia, the indie ones, you now need to have a celebrity in your film. You need to have $50,000. No one has that. Mm. And we're super aware that we never want to get like that. Our winning films last year, we still joke, like Hugo Weaving and David Wenham was in our winning film. But it wasn't like about that at all. The film itself was amazing. But then we thought we need this Film Breaker Award to make sure that people still can make their first film and win a big prize.
Yeah, and like even with smartphone films now, I'm getting that attention because of like films like Tangerine, for example.
Mm.
They're getting the focus that they deserve. And you suddenly realize that you have this very empowering tool in your pocket that everyone carries a smartphone, and anybody can be a filmmaker. And that's quite liberating, as for anyone who's interested in films.
As someone who's been following really grassroots independent filmmaking for quite a while now, I noticed that as the tools that people can buy for not much money got better and better in quality and lower in price, somehow instead of this empowering a lot of people, many, many people got obsessed with chasing incredibly professional technical standards, which are on par with what's being seen in Hollywood. So the opposite of what people who have been looking for an explosion of new talent, the opposite of what they wanted to see happen ended up happening. So I think the smartphone, given how it in no way pretends to be a professional film camera, yet offers incredible technical quality, could be the antidote to this, because it truly is a no-cost alternative with no pretensions of cinema standards, and yet can hold its own when you treat it that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, no one in the smartphone film business, I mean, we don't say we're going to replace Red or, you know, any kind of camera. Mm. We're just about giving other people a chance. Even people who shoot, like Sean Baker from The Tangerine Director, he shoots normally on, you know, pro cameras and just decided for aesthetic reasons and budget reasons to shoot Tangerine on a phone. Now he's gone back to traditional filmmaking, you know. So I think it can be a choice as well. It's just an alternate camera, really. Right. And I think the industry is, I don't know, it's a really exciting field, smartphone filmmaking. And we partner with lots of festivals around the world who are smartphone festivals. And we just kind of all like help each other and share and meet up. And we're starting, very exciting this year, we're starting a Global Mobile Film Awards, which where one of the founding members with Susie Botello, who's from the International Mobile Film Festival in San Diego. So it's her festival, which is on this weekend. So she's invited us to be the founding members of that. It's essentially going to be like the Oscars of smartphone filmmaking. So our Best Film Award winner will go automatically into that. So we kind of, we're all banding together to kind of, because we just love films and filmmakers and grassroots filmmaking, really.
And what I found remarkable, just on the grassroots level, there was a great film at the last festival, Bubbles Don't Lie.
So good.
Oh, it was so hilarious. And the presenter was saying you had to do some guerrilla filmmaking to get some of the shots.
Yeah.
And they can only do that with a smartphone. Sean Baker had the same experience. Do you find that some of the films you've got in the festival are different because of using this medium in that sense?
Yeah, definitely. You do get access because everyone has a phone, right? And everyone is constantly filming or watching something on their phone just in our society. So someone holding a film up in public is not going to draw the attention of council workers or whatever. I'm sure you could go to Bondi Beach and probably shoot a pretty decent film really quickly. You would never be able to do that on a traditional camera. So you do get access like that. They also say like documentaries, it opens yourself up. People open up a lot quicker because they're used to having a phone now in their face, and they're also heaps smaller than a traditional camera. So people are finding when they're shooting documentaries that with the smartphone, they're getting better quality or just better interviews quicker, I guess.
And Angela, for the people who, young filmmakers who are listening, who want to produce a film but don't necessarily have an avenue to do so, but are hearing, wait, there is this place here for me, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I say do it. I read this quote. Oh, I should remember who said it. It was one of the top directors. I read it this morning on Instagram, which was like, any advice that they had to a filmmaker was to pull out your camera and shoot a film, like just make a film. So I'll say pull out your phone because, I mean, there's so much memory on phones these days, right? You just put it to the cloud or whatever you have anyway. Film.
There are no excuses now.
There's no excuse. You've got it in your pocket. It's a full HD camera, you know. It's like, and it blows up amazingly to a big screen.
The stuff at the SF3 looks great on the cinema screen. I was really surprised when I went.
Yeah, it's right. It's at Chevelle, right, which is a massive cinema. We have it in the big cinema at Chevelle, and it blows up amazingly.
Mm. Fantastic. So that's SF3. That was Angela Blake. And you can see the festival very soon in Sydney and all around the world, indeed.
Yeah.
Angela, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we'll be back very shortly talking all things Star Wars and Star Wars spin-offs. Stay tuned.
Fresh perspectives on local and international stories.
Once you get out on your own, if you get to go again, you go back where you come from.
We want to leave this country in as good a state as when we first came.
There's a neighbourhood and a wealth in our neighbourhood.
You can have too much dignity in this world.
The Wire, weekdays at 6 p.m. on 2SER 107.3.
Mm. Budget Day is one of the most important sitting days of the year for our Parliament.
2SER will be live on the ground in Canberra, May 9 and 10, with our team of reporters and experts ready to bring you in-depth analysis and commentary on the Coalition's plans for the nation over the next 4 years.
Who will be the winners? Who will miss out? And how about that deficit?
Tune in May 9th and 10th to get 2SER's independent coverage of the budget.
Everything you need to know right here on 2SER 107.3.
Where are you getting your daily dose of reading? Are you an ardent book shopper? Are you an e-reader fanatic? Do you ever get out and hit up some live storytelling? My name is Andrew Popel, and Final Draft is, of course, that half hour every Saturday morning where we sit back, relax with a good book and talk reading and literary culture.
Final Draft. Books, writing and publishing.
Telling stories is such a human thing to do.
Saturday mornings from 10 on 2SER 107.3.
Hi there, I'm Jake Malcolm, one half of Gay Panic on 2SER. You can catch me and...
Hi. It's the guru of us, Jack Crane.
And yes, Jack, every Friday evening from 7 till 8. And on Gay Panic, we look at everything sex, sexuality and gender diverse and unravel all the LGBTIQ issues that make up the wonderful, diverse rainbow that is our community. And yeah, like you heard, Jack is the guru of us. And to find out what that means, you'll just have to tune in every Friday evening from 7 with myself, Jake Morgan and Jack Crane. That's Gay Panic on 2SER 107.3. See you there.
Make the radio your back porch on Thursdays with The Outpost at midday on 2SER with a feel of roots and Americana. Followed by 60s and 70s rock revolutions on The Hands of Time at 2 p.m. Thursday afternoon music on 2SER 107.3.
And we're back with Film Fight Club. Now, we have a request from listener Louise in honour of May the 4th, which is this week. May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with us all.
And it is to discuss Star Wars spin-offs. And that is particularly whether Jar Jar should get a spin-off of his own. Now, this may seem like a little bit of a strange suggestion, but I think it's a great suggestion because, you know, while Jar Jar may be the most hated character in the Star Wars universe...
Oh, come on, Glenn. That's a bit harsh.
Is it? Is it really?
Seems pretty accurate to me.
But okay, all right. Okay.
But he's also, everyone hates Jar Jar, but he's also the most misunderstood character in the Star Wars universe. And I'll tell you why. Many listeners will be familiar with the most read thread in the history of Reddit, and that is about Darth Jar Jar. Now, the thread contends that Jar Jar is actually the most evil force in the Star Wars universe and is actually behind all the things that are... just generally going on.
Oh, my God.
And hold on. There's a lot to back this up here. Now let's think about this. It was Jar Jar who ushered in the death of democracy in the Galactic Senate. It was Jar Jar who was on the same planet as Senator Palpatine, who ultimately turned out to be Darth Sidious. What were they doing just sitting on the booth for all these years? How is it that Jar Jar has the reflexes of a Jedi? Not just any Jedi, but better than any Jedi we have seen. It was Jar Jar who introduced Anakin to Qui-Gon Jinn, and hence, well, the events of all the Star Wars films. There's a lot to suggest that Jar Jar is, in fact, the most evil of all the Sith Lords, and I think it would be fantastic. You know, we've seen Rogue One, we've seen all these great Star Wars stories, but to see a film which shows Jar Jar for what he truly is, I think that's what fans want to see.
Yeah, look, that's all nice and true, but honestly, wouldn't you want to see a Jar Jar redemption story? I mean, he is the most hated character. I mean... you'll think that. Even George Lucas hates him. Even George Lucas thinks he is quite a clown. So wouldn't we want to see Jar Jar find his Jarness? You know, eventually realize who he is? A redemption story where he becomes the true hero he's destined to be. Kind of a Batman-esque Jar Jar Binks rises narrative.
It would be a nice contrast to... that would be a nice contrast to what is currently the... canon in the Star Wars universe, where Jar Jar in the latest novel, someone rocks up and they see a street performer and they're like, and oh wait a second, it's Jar Jar just on some random planet.
Look, clowns are sad people. Honestly, they're not funny. They're making everyone else laugh, but inherently they're quite sad. And Jar Jar, you know, if I was Jar Jar, I would be pretty terrified. Look at all these people picking on me just because, you know, I might have messed up a few times. Who doesn't?
Wasn't Phantom Menace already Jar Jar's redemption story? Because we start off with Jar Jar is everyone's fool in the Gungan world, and then at the end of the movie, he saves the day, right?
We say, Mecha, you, Gungan general.
Yeah, yeah.
That made no sense. But then again, just by sheer force of... We thought it was, you know, a joke that he was tripping over all the stuff and destroying the droid army, but no, there was something much deeper at play here. I mean, with those reflexes, with that chance, I think the force was at work.
Yeah, I mean, if he is, you know, who he isn't, then he might probably be the best actor in the whole planet, and that would be amazing. But at the same time, I think we need to give Jar Jar more humanity. Right now, he's just a clown. He's somebody we laugh at. But we need to find the real Jar Jar. You know, what does Jar Jar think about Jar Jar?
I'll be honest, as the outsider to this fight, this does sound completely ridiculous to me.
No, it's very serious,
right,
Chris.
Right. But I'm also thinking, why not? Because we're reaching a point where there's going to be a Star Wars film every year. How much content is there in this universe to explore? And if we're going to have that much Star Wars, why should every Star Wars movie be the same? Why can't Star Wars be completely ridiculous? Why can't we have Jar Jar Binks as the savior of the universe in slapstick absurdity? Why don't we explore Star Wars as a rom-com or a slasher movie?
And not just this, you know, I want to see the Cantina, one of the classic scenes in Star Wars. How did the band get there? What is their story? That music was great. I want to see more of this.
Yeah.
Why don't we have a concert film about the Cantina band?
Yeah, and the thing is, Star Wars is too serious. In the sense that it takes itself too seriously. In fact, it's not a serious thing at all. I mean, a lot of things are quite far-fetched. So let's bring back the campiness, because let's be honest, it's taken with a pinch of salt.
This is, to be honest, what Virat brings up is the reason why I preferred The Force Awakens to Rogue One. I know.
This is another fight, by the way.
Oh, wow. This is a fight that's... Definitely.
Yeah, let's keep that for another day.
All right. But I'll always go for campiness in my space operas over, you know, dead serious approaches. Anyway.
Well, we do have Star Wars films every year for the rest of our lives to look forward to. So,
oh God.
I'm sure, you know, this will all get a chance. But
to be fought out in the ring.
To be fought out in the ring. We have to wrap up soon. But first, we have our 30 seconds of excitement where we each get to say what we're pumped for in the coming weeks. I am pumped for The Circle. This is a Tom Hanks film. You very rarely get to see Tom Hanks play the villain. He is the most liked man in America. So to see him play a bad guy is quite fun. Although, says Emma Watson, who has had a recent boon with Beauty and the Beast. It's a tech thriller. And it's coming out in cinemas in the next week or so. So something to check out.
Well, talking of The Circle, I just want to plug this really quickly. The film I talked about last week, Bahubali The Conclusion, that opened in the US box office in Thursday night previews at the number one spot, beating The Circle with 2.5 million at just 1/10 the number of screens. That is quite amazing. For like an Indian film to like be the number one at the US box office for previews, that has never happened. So I'm very happy about that. And because of that, I'm going to plug another Bollywood film for May 12th, which is called Meri Pyari Bindu, which is going to be a rom-com mix of Ruby Sparks meets 500 Days of Summer, which is kind of a cool concept. So I'm looking forward to it. Bollywood is changing up how it does rom-com. So I'm pretty intrigued, and so you should be as well, because it's making some money.
And money always dictates what is best in our world.
That's low, Chris.
No. I'd love to hear you talk about Bollywood in a future segment. That's what I'm excited about.
Great.
Let us know about it. Teach us. But I'd also like to plug Sydney Film Fest is announcing its slate 1 week from today. I'm really looking forward to hearing what they're going to be programming and possibly talking about that next week.
Fantastic. So, and if you are listening to our podcast, you will hear soon a little discussion about a film that's in cinemas called Colossal. So please check it out on Falcon Screen. And in the meantime, have a great week. And remember, don't talk about Film Club.
Unless you're promoting it to your friends.
Yeah, when that's totally okay.
All right. Goodbye.
Good night.
Good night.
American Essentials celebrates the best of American independent cinema. From May 9th, Palace Cinema's American Essentials showcases the latest U.S. indie treasures, with 20 films making their Australian premiere. Highlights include opening night film 20th Century Women and Becoming Bond, starring George Lazenby, alongside restored American classics David Lynch's Eraserhead and Andy Warhol's Bad. Info and tickets at americanessentials.com.au. Palace Cinema's sponsors of 2SCR 107.3.